Hi, this is Fabi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are Latinos Who Lunch, the podcast where we talk about important things like
La Guadalupana, La Guadalupana bajo el tepe. Yeah.
Hello, hello, hello.
Kisho.
How are you, Babelito?
I am very wired because I was using this like Cuban thing to make coffee and I don't know how to make it. So it made just a little bit. So it's super concentrated and I'm like going really fast.
Wow. That's good. High energy. We like that. We like that for the show.
I've been waiting for this episode forever.
I know. Well, before we get into it,
yes,
I feel like today we should do a special version. Instead of talking about lunch, let's talk about coffee. Because I know, bitch, you are a coffee queen.
Yes, bitch.
I just saw you make this coffee from scratch. Tell me.
Okay.
What's your...
Okay. I love it. Okay. It's pumpkin chai season, bitch.
Okay, so what is your favorite kind of coffee?
Okay, so I've gone through the whole spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was an undergrad, I used to go to school full time and work full time. So my day was from 8 a.m. to like midnight when I work in retail. So I needed caffeine. So I was drinking like 6 sodas a day. That wasn't good. That's not good for the heart in all its senses. Like, it's not good. So I decided to drink coffee. I made myself drink coffee. I didn't like it, so I started drinking mochas, and I stuck with that. So from 2003 to the time you met me, it was a mocha every fucking day from Starbucks,
because that's all I knew. A grande, two pump, half sweet, mocha. Triple
mocha.
Mocha,
right.
No whip.
So it started to change because I'm like, all I can taste is a chocolate because I was getting more and more evolved as new coffee shops were opening in town.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I finally understood what good coffee was, right?
Yeah.
So I quit my mochas like a year ago, and then it started with the cappuccinos. But a cappuccino is just milk, froth, and the espresso, not enough. So my drink of choice is a cortado. And a cortado is just the cappuccino and a little bit of milk and a little bit of foam, and that's it. So that's, I will have like 3 cortados a day. So it's basically just like they cut the caffeine with a little bit of foam. I rarely make it at home because to me, it's like the only reward I have during the day. Just go and say hi to my barista, get my coffee, sit down for an hour and read or whatever. Like, that's my favorite part of the day.
Wow.
So that's what I do with
what
my
a
coffee.
Lifestyle.
It is. You know, mi papá siempre me decía, me dice, uy, qué padre, cómo trabajas, te la mantienes en el café. But like, you know, like.
He's right.
The Latino guilt, girl.
Yeah.
¿Y tú cómo te lo tomas? Well, you don't drink coffee no more.
I mean, I drink it because it's like social and people are like, let's go get coffee. So I don't need it. It's just like a habit that mm-hmm. I get into based on who I'm with. Because it's like a whole, to me, it's just annoying because it's like a whole thing like, oh, I can't start my day without my coffee. I'm like, bitch, drink some water. Como dice mi tía, apriétate el culo and head out the door, bitch. Like, let's roll. Yeah, actually drinking a lot of water when you wake up actually does get you going, you know, because it like starts your metabolism and you're hydrated and healthy. So I'm not really picky when it comes to coffee, but now because most of my hipster friends love coffee, like I can actually tell when it's like good coffee or bad coffee, you know?
Yeah.
And the good coffee is always the Folgers medium roast, that is.
Folgers, despierta lo mejor en ti.
The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
So now that I moved to Pilsen, so it's my building.
Yeah.
And then las vías del tren touch basically the window of my room.
Yeah.
And then the stop has a Mexican coffee shop. It's called Cafecito.
Ooh, nice.
So all I have to do is walk 2 steps, get my coffee, and go. But recently,
cool. Everybody knows exactly where you live now.
That's fine.
Perfect.
So now I can. Now there's another coffee shop called Intersect, and uh-huh. I'm there every single day. They just opened like a month ago. Bitch, they have una torta de chilaquiles. You heard it right. It's a fucking. It's so good that when I saw the chef cooking it, I mean, at a bar, I went off because I was drunk, but it's also really good. And she bought me a drink. She was so happy. I'm like, girl, I want to see you like with a plate showing off your torta in a local newspaper. She's like, oh my God, really? I'm like, yes, this torta is going to become legendary. It's amazing.
That's awesome.
And it is what it is. It's bolillo con chilaquiles and the right ratio of not too crispy but not too greasy, not too saggy, just perfect bite. And then unos
soggy
huevos, a little soggy, but
it, soggy, say it with me,
soggy.
Oh yes,
come through. So it's soggy enough,
there you go,
but crispy enough.
Yeah,
because you know some places you go for the chilaquiles and it's just tostadas con chile, like that's not the thing.
That's not it. So you're right.
And the coffee there, the baristas there, shout out to them, they make the perfect cortado. I don't have to go anywhere. It's ooh, like it's like 2 blocks from my house. Cortado. So if you see me at a coffee shop, just buy me a cortado and I'll become your best friend.
You know what I think it is that my grandmother used to give me coffee when I was little. So like I don't have this like want for it because yeah. I've always drank coffee ever since I can remember.
Right.
And so I hope it was decaf. Probably not, knowing my grandma.
But what does it do to...
So she would make... Her and my mom, actually, both of them, uh-huh. would make us almost like café con leche, you know? So yes. It's just like...
Poquito café, mucha
leche. It's just
leche.
A little bit of coffee and then a lot of milk and then super sweet, like right. when you're little. So that's what... When I think of coffee, that's what I think of. Mm-hmm. And so I try not to drink like regular milk anymore. So it's hard for me to like enjoy coffee.
Me too.
Because you have to get, I mean, until recently, you couldn't get creamer with like an alternative milk, like an almond milk or a soy milk.
Oat milk.
But girl, the technology has advanced. There is amazing almond milk creamer. There's really good.
Really?
Soy milk creamer. Girl. Wow. And so now I can live my...
Your best hipster life.
My best hipster life. Yeah, I just like, yeah, just give me a regular coffee. What are your alternative milks?
I actually fucks with oat milk. Like,
it tastes good.
It's okay, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Good, it's good. But I mean, I like my creamy, like, thick.
Oh, yeah. Get into it.
Cállate, pendeja. Cappuccinos or cortados. So if you love me, you buy me a cortado. If you hate me, make me an Nescafé. What is it with Mexicans or Latinos in general, Nescafé?
It's that burnt taste. People
it's
love it.
It's gross.
Girl, you're the one that goes to Starbucks. That coffee is burnt.
Yeah, I don't like Starbucks anymore. Yeah. I mean, it's convenience now, but like, I don't like it anymore. Yeah. But Nescafé, wait, my mom, I will bring her like Pavlika's coffee and she'll put it aside and she'll make her Nescafé. Kind of like your grandma with the Chinese food. Like, she likes what she likes and that's it.
It's true.
I don't get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, that was cute.
Yeah.
Yes.
And shout out to Cafe Compan if you wanna listen to more about Latinos and coffee. She always recommends new coffees and she's fucking amazing.
And shout out to the other podcast, Cafe con Chisme.
I'm looking at the sticker in your computer right now.
Yeah, because it's in the name. And they're two amazing, super smart, beautiful people. Shout out to everybody that went to their live show. It looks so fun.
Amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah. Okay, so this episode, you've been asking me about this episode to do an episode about this topic for a long time, and we're finally going to do it. Can you introduce the show, por favor?
Yes, so because yesterday was the birthday, I think the most important birthday in all of Latin America, or at least in Mexico, I decided to break down the image of La Virgen de Guadalupe. Why? Because there's a lot of misconceptions about it. And I taught an Aztec art class on the spring in UNLV. And I finally put together my PowerPoint thinking, psh, I know what's up. But no, there's so much information that people don't have. there's certain topics that we're going to touch upon. So if you're like a devoted Virgen de Guadalupe follower, you probably should turn off this podcast, because the way that we look at it in class is in a historical, colonial, and art historical way. So we have to take faith out of the equation. And that's exactly what we're going to do today. We're going to analyze the image of the Virgen de Guadalupe, our personal anecdotes with the image of the Virgen de Guadalupe, and yeah, we're just going to deconstruct this whole thing. So kind of like the Frida episode, but with a Virgen
okay,
de Guadalupe.
So today,
with less hate, because I love the image. But anyway.
Okay, so we're going to talk about La Virgen. Yes. Interesting. Okay, so where do you want to start?
I don't know. Like, I feel like I want to start just by giving you like a general story, like the legend that everybody knows about the Virgen de Guadalupe. And then we can start with personal anecdotes, and then I can talk about its significance in the history of art.
Okay.
And then we'll go from there.
So the first time that I ever... Okay, so I got to kind of lay it down for you.
Go for it.
I was raised super... if anybody listened to the episode of Radio Menea that I was on, I talked about it there. I haven't really got into it on Latinos Who Lunch.
You haven't. I was very surprised. I was happily surprised to listen how personal you got in that episode. It was nice.
So I used to go to church maybe like 3 or 4 times a week when I was young. Mm-hmm. My family is like very devout Protestant Christians. Mm-hmm. Shout out to La Iglesia Evangelico Amigos here in Las Vegas. So we were like evangelists, you know, which is like not quite Pentecostal and not quite Baptist. It's like a whole different thing. They're like... So it was weird. A lot of the rules were based on the Quaker religion. It was like an offshoot of the Quaquer religion.
Damn.
And it's because the Quakers, if you don't know who the Quakers are, Google it, because Google I don't know it. Either. So they went all the way down to Guatemala, like back in the 70s, 80s.
Cabrones.
And did a lot of mission work. And that's where they got my family. And so when my grandfather and a bunch of other people came to Las Vegas, they founded La Iglesia Amigos, the Friends Church. That's mm-hmm. what the Quakers are called, the Friends, yeah. here in Las Vegas. But, you know, the Quaker Church is also known for being like very accepting of everybody and like in the name friendly. Mm-hmm. And that's just not... For Latin Americans, that doesn't fly. Right, like, right, what? Right. A friendly church? So I think they adopted a lot of like evangelical Christian rules and traditions into that religion. Okay, so all that to say that I was raised with my Guatemalan family in that church, and I was raised to think of La Virgen de Guadalupe mm-hmm. and Catholicism as a sham. And that all of these, like the Virgen de Guadalupe and all of the saints that are in the Catholic Church are all false idols.
Imágenes falsas.
They're false yes. idols, and the Catholics were crazy, and that these idols were actually evil. So from a very young age, when I saw the Virgen de Guadalupe, I saw her as the boogeyman. I saw her as La Llorona. Like, I saw her as El Cucuy. Like, it was...
El Chupacabras.
To me, that imagery, all the Catholic imagery was scary to me.
Wow.
To the point where one of my tías, I'm not going to out her on here,
yeah.
but she had a secret. She knew that my family would judge her for being Catholic. Mm-hmm. So she would practice Catholicism. She would go to Catholic church on the down low. And I remember wow. she would have a Virgen de Guadalupe altar in her house, mm-hmm. in her bathroom. And so oh, wow. whenever I went to visit my cousins, and I would love to stay the night with my, shout out to my, oh, I'm not going to say their names, but I had so much fun because they had all the Ninja Turtle toys. Anyway, I would go there and I would be so afraid to use the bathroom because the Virgen de Guadalupe was there. Like, there was an altar with candles and everything for the Virgen de Guadalupe mm-hmm. to the point where, like, if I had to take a shower there, like I would be scared to take a shower because I'm like, oh my god, the virgen's gonna get me. Yeah, like really? I was that scared.
No,
I was that. Well, I was
so
like,
era como la llorona.
Yeah, I was like 5 or 6 years old.
Damn.
Yes, traumatized. People fucking you up, and it worked. Like for the longest time, I was so scared to go into a Catholic church. Yeah, you know what I mean?
That's so, so crazy.
I have the opposite experience of La Virgen de Guadalupe. And I didn't really start learning about what she meant mm-hmm. to Mexican culture until like middle school, high school, when I started seeing stories like on the news and then also representations on public broadcasting stations mm-hmm. like PBS.
Yeah.
and do you want to start with this?
No, I want to contextualize what you just said, but...
Okay. Uh-huh.
So it's very interesting you mentioned that you're son protestantes, no?
Yeah.
So the Protestant church, it started in the, I'm going to say early 1500s. I may be wrong, late 1400s. Early 1500s.
Facts don't matter. It's
right.
Okay.
But it was basically protesting the Catholic Church because the Catholic Church has gotten so corrupt. One of the biggest things what the...
Not anymore, thank God.
Yeah. I mean, they se reformaron. They're not sexual deviants or anything
like that.
No,
yeah.
Aleluya.
Amen.
Entonces, so the church starts because they're going against the Catholic Church because the Catholic Church is filthy rich to the point that they're charging people money to buy condos when they die. Like, so, you know, like they call indulgences. So you give money and then you get your piece of cloud. And then when you die, but only like rich people were able to afford that.
Well, you buy condos in heaven?
Basically, that's what you do. Like you just buy your apartment. So when you die, you assure yourself a place in heaven. That's what the church was doing. So that was like the la gota que derramó el vaso. Like after all the corruption,
wow.
That was the biggest thing where the Reformation is like, fuck this shit. So fast forward to the 1500s, el Papa y todos los like bishops and everybody gets together and they're like, how are we going to gain believers back? That's when we get the Counter-Reformation. And it is after the 1500s that after the middle of the 1500s or so that they're pushing for images because they realize that paintings and images are good for education. So when the Spanish come to the Americas, it's the perfect timing. Because you have the Counter-Reformation happening in Europe, and then you have a spiritual conquest happening, or genocide or extermination happening in the Americas. So the rules of the Counter-Reformation of exalting images, which is the opposite of what you went through, which is denied images, is happening in the Americas. And that's when the image of the Virgen de Guadalupe pops up. So it is the most important image ever created. Why? Because it served equally for oppression, but also for resistance.
Dang.
Because when the Creoles gain independence from the Spanish, fast forward 1810, what was the first flag of Mexico? It was an image of the Virgen de Guadalupe. So
before the eagle cactus,
before
thing?
All of that, because there was no project of the nation yet. So as they're fighting for independence, this guy Miguel Hidalgo goes into a small town in Guanajuato, a Totonilco el Grande. Google it. That church is amazing.
Okay.
And takes a painting of the Virgen de Guadalupe, puts it in a stick, and that becomes the first flag of the country.
Damn.
So that serves for liberation, but in the 1500s, it was oppression. Because that served for spiritual conquest. So it's like a very complex and very fucked up and very fascinating history.
Well, I know you're an art historian, but I think I can show you something that will teach you a thing or two.
I wonder what it is.
About Mexican art history. Okay. There's a very popular television show in the 90s starring a Jack Russell Terrier. named Wishbone. Are you familiar with this program?
Absolutely.
So if you don't know what Wishbone is, I think most of the episodes are on YouTube and you can follow along if you want. I'm going to play. Okay, so there's this episode of Wishbone mm-hmm. called Viva Wishbone. So look it up and I'm going to play the beginning of part two of it. So let me just set it up for you.
Okay.
So Wishbone lives in this place called Oakdale, okay? And Wishbone has an owner who's like a single mom and her son, Joe, uh-huh. who has the flyest bowl cut you've seen in your whole life, okay?
You have to watch Narcos.
Yeah. Okay, so he's got a bowl cut. His best friend is this black guy. Okay, it doesn't matter who his best friends are. But in this episode, Doña Julia, I believe, comes back and she used to be Joe's nanny growing up. So this is kind of like a perfect thing because it's like the Mother's Day episode.
Yeah.
And it's like
La Madre de America
is La Virgen de Guadalupe. So in this section uh-huh. of Wishbone, so if you're not familiar with the show, Wishbone is not only a family dog, but he's also a Shakespearean actor. And he takes you through different tales, whether it be classics like The Tempest, The Three Musketeers, or The Origin of Mexico. Wishbone actually plays different characters. And in this one, he plays the one and only Juan Diego. And before Juan Diego is played by a dog from Europe.
No!
I know. Okay. Doña Julia, I don't think that's her real name, but I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Sure, let's call her Doña.
Don Francisca, she tells the story of the origin of Mexico. So I'm going to play it right now.
So wait, am I allowed to stop if I hear like some crazy
tell me,
shit?
Show me a signal to stop and I'll stop the audio so that we can talk about
I'm
it.
All okay. ears. You must have heard of the Aztec people. They are part of my blood, a part of most Mexicans. They built their empire at Tenochtitlan, place of the cactus. It was a brilliant city, greater than Venice, greater than Rome. And on a hill named Tepeyac, they built a temple to the mother goddess. She was mother of all, creator and destroyer.
So far, so good.
Wow.
Girl, we're just 30 seconds in.
The Aztecs are not the mother culture of most Mexicans. It's a small, it was a big empire, but it's a small empire compared to the hundreds and hundreds of different cultures that we have. Let's get out of that mentality and start highlighting other people, or other originary peoples, which, by the way, always resisted fucking colonization. One. Two, this whole concept that tenían una madre los aztecas y la chingada, that's bullshit. The concept Tonatzin, which uh-huh. means our dear mother, it's a concept. It's not a mom. So they built.
It's just like saying Mother Earth.
Casi yeah. como Pachamama. Yes, exactly. So in this mountain, El Tepeyac, which means water mountain or beginning, Tepe, water mountain, Yatl, beginning, El Tepeyac, that's a site that the Spanish recognized where the Aztecs celebrated beginnings, births, moms. But it's not one single mother. So again, Tepeyac is a hill. Etonatzin is the concept. It's not one single god. Scholars have not been able to pinpoint something to a single god. So that idea that we all are Aztecs and we all are Tonatzin, it's bullshit. Continue.
These savages were thinking about concepts back then? Wow.
Wow.
Okay, be quiet. Let me watch my show.
The Aztecs were very warlike people. And they humbled the other tribes.
Come on, let me watch my show.
This is actually truth. Continue.
Oh, okay.
But they were also very religious. They believed their calendar could tell them the future. The calendar said they were living in the age of the fifth sun. It told them that this was the last sun. Then the conquistadors came. They came with enemies of the Aztecs. And the fifth son died. Los conquistadores destruyeron todo. They conquered the people. And they destroyed the temple of their mother. The Aztec people were like orphans. Not long after the conquest, some Aztecs began to accept the religion of the Spaniards.
No,
They just accepted the religion.
Yeah, they se juntaron todos, tuvieron una junta. It's like, hey, girl, let's just accept this.
You killed all my family members. Yes. You brought us disease. You drug us. You you lynched us.
You rape us.
You raped us. You know what? Let's give Catholicism a try.
We're going to fucks with this from now
Jesus,
on.
Jesus, let's fuck with you.
Okay.
That's how simple it was.
Oh, my God. So, I mean, overall, this is not the worst version I've heard. Pero no mames.
Oh, look at this scene. Juan Diego is played by a dog. Let's play it.
Okay.
One of these Aztecs was Juan Diego. Every Saturday, he walked over Tepeyac Hill on his way to hear Mass. But this December morning, something extraordinary happened.
Juan Diego.
Yes?
Juan was not scared. His heart was happy when he heard this voice. There, before his eyes, stood a maiden, absolutely perfect. And she spoke gently to Juan in the language of the Aztecs. Know, my dearest son, that I am the Virgin Holy Mary, Mother of God, yours and of all people who live in this land.
I will listen to those who trust in me, and I will cleanse and nurse all their sufferings.
Yes, my lady.
Go to the bishop. Tell him what you have seen here, and ask that he build a sacred house for me on this hill, so that I may intercede for all who ask.
I will, my lady.
Juan went straight to the home of the bishop.
So, is this true?
Yes.
Era bilingüe la Virgen de Guadalupe.
So, Juan Diego, I think, who was just canonized a couple of years ago.
What does that mean?
Like, he's become a saint. Like, it's approved by the Pope.
Ooh, that's a goal. Hashtag goals.
Of hashtag bless. Yes, he goes, I think, three times La Virgen se le aparece. So the first time the Virgin appears and she's just like, hey, girl, so like, you need to construct this site over here. Go tell Bishop Zumárraga, which I think he was an inquisidor or like some fucked up shit, like leader of the Inquisition in Mexico before the Inquisition actually was established.
Inquisition is when they killed people when they didn't believe in Christ.
Basically they persecuted Jews, but in Mexico it became like its whole nother thing. Jesus. But we'll get into it later. So he goes down to Bishop Juan de Zumárraga. He goes, hey girl, so I just saw this like big Virgen de Guadalupe, it's morena, and we'll get into her skin in a little bit. And she's saying that we need to construct this site. By the way, there's so many different stories in Catholicism dating back from the 300-500s where there's an apparition and they say, build me a temple. So it's like justification for building this temple sometimes. Mm. And Bishop de Zumárraga goes like, I don't believe in you. So he goes up again into the hill. I think it happens 3 or 4 times. And finally, La Virgen de Guadalupe is like, okay, girl, this is what we're going to do because I'm tired of fucking appearing to you.
Yeah.
You're going to pick up these flores de Castilla. No mames, güey, de Castilla from fucking Spain because they don't grow. But miraculously, they grow in Tepeyac. This flower.
What does
from,
Castilla mean?
It's like a city in Spain. So he picks up these flowers, these flores de Castilla, puts them in his amatl, or this, his, ¿cómo se llama? Como his robe.
Yeah.
And then he brings the flower. He's carrying the flowers with him. And then when he's in front of the bishop, he lets go of the robe y sácate las babuchas. The image appears of the Virgen de Guadalupe. And that's when Bishop Juan de Zumárraga finally says, okay, I get it. And let's build a temple on top of Tepeyac.
And if I know this story correctly, the painting that's sitting in the church on the hill of Tepeyac, that piece of Juan Diego's robe is the painting that's hanging in the church underneath the moving escalator that's there now.
So this is what I want to ask you. You said that you remember seeing it in the news, especially around December.
Yeah.
Because December 12th is the anniversary of that event. What have you heard, for example, in the news about that painting?
I mean, I remember people telling me that that's the actual apparition, but it's such a huge painting. How tall was Juan Diego? I mean, I know he wasn't a Jack Russell Terrier, so it's like, how big was this robe? So that's where, even when I was a kid, I was like, I don't think so. I don't think they had big and talls back then, you know? So, I mean, that's all I know. And then in the news, what I remember seeing a lot is generally around this time is when you saw the pareidolia in different places around the world, mm-hmm. which means like the appearance of Jesus or La Virgen de Guadalupe, yeah. like in toast or in shadows and windows and trees and tortillas and freckles and whatever, you know?
How do you call that?
Pareidolia.
Hey, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Nice.
I know a lot of things about religion. Because Jesus loves me.
So yeah, it starts appearing.
and he appeared in my, I don't know. Anyway, I was going to make some stupid jokes.
So this is reference to the veil of Veronica. So when Veronica goes, and during the Passion of Christ, when Christ keeps falling and falling and falling, when he's carrying the cross, when he's going to be sacrificed.
Wait, Veronica?
Veronica. So like Veronica brings a veil and puts it against Christ's face, y se le graba la cara en el velo de Verónica. So that is like the precedent to like all these apparitions into actual like cloth material. This time the cloth is like, it's local cloth. So what you heard, it's exactly the story that we all think it's true, that the actual image is the real deal. That's the image that appear thanks to Las Rosas de Castilla, right?
Yes.
So, but the reality is that this image was actually painted by an indigenous artist. Caca! People do not talk about this, but this is a whole thing with art history. It has been narrowed down to a Marcos. It could be Marcos Ipac or Marcos de Aquino. We don't know.
That's my great-grandpa's name.
Yes. So
Marcos. Was he the one?
So there is a wonderful book, and this is one of my two recommendations of the week. Janet Favrat Peterson wrote the definitive book of the Virgen de Guadalupe that traces back the beginnings of the image in Spain.
You're going to put all these links on the website, right?
I'm going to put all of it. From La Virgen, I think it's La Virgen. I'm going to put it in the website. But I think it's the Virgen del Rosario. And then, and that image, it's black. And the idea is that it's black because in the Song of Songs from the Bible, it says, quote, I am black but beautiful. So that's where we get the color of the Virgen de Guadalupe. And all those things, Favre Peterson talks about it in her book, Visualizing Guadalupe from Black Madonna to Queen of the Americas. Back to the actual artist. So there was a school. It's called Escuela de los Naturales back in the 1500s, where natives, where the Aztecs, where people from the region were trained to make European art. And supposedly the leading artists of that workshop of the Escuela de los Naturales, who also helped put together this altarpiece of Xochimilco, was the painter of this image. So this is why it connected with everybody, man, because you have the iconography that is European, the rays of sun, the half moon, the Virgen del Apocalipsis, the Immaculate Conception of the Virgins, all of these ideas that come from Europe are there. But now you put together the concept of Donatzin, you put it together with the idea that she appears at Tepeyac, and then you give her brown skin, then it becomes a local image.
Donatzin is the concept
of our mother.
Of our mother, yes. And Tepeyac is the actual mountain
where she appeared.
Where she appeared.
Yeah, and there's like there's different deities, female deities, like Tosi is one of them. Also the Cihuacuatl, it's another female deity of a fertility goddess. So there's all these celebrations and all these ideas that come from Tepeyac. The Europeans knew that, and they're like, that is the perfect site for the Virgen de Guadalupe to appear because it's all about beginnings. It's all about motherhood. It's all about fertility. So the Aztecs recognized that. They recognized. So when they saw the image of the Virgen de Guadalupe, they're like, oh yeah, we're familiar with those concepts. We get it. And on top of that, she's not white. She's brown. So it became this huge phenomenon to the point that there are sermons, for example, Franciscans, which again, religious orders of the time that said, no, this painting was actually made by an Indio. Like, why the fuck are you going to pray to this painting? And then there's other religious orders that are saying, wow, she just appeared and she's doing all these miracles. We need to follow. So it becomes an instrument of conquest. Super, super, super important, to the point that I believe that this is one of the reasons why indigenous people or original peoples of Mexico were not allowed to paint religious images. Because when they did, they created a fucking revolution, right? They changed the whole entire empire. So I really believe that this is an example that pushed the laws for indigenous people not to make religious paintings anymore.
Wow.
And to this day, this is the most important image. And don't forget it, people. It was painted by a Nahuatl artist. It was painted by an Aztec artist. This is so badass. So I feel like instead of being afraid of thinking that this was not made miraculously, we should recognize that it was made by a Nahuatl. This is more significant, I think. But yeah, people don't want to see that because, you know, like, porque no llora sangre. Bitch, the type of legends I heard behind the Virgen de Guadalupe, que se aparecen las tortillas, que llora sangre, que como chingados the oil has lasted all these years. There's paintings in Europe that have lasted like 800 years in canvases. Like, it's not a unique thing. There's murals that have persisted for thousands of years in Mexico and in Europe. Like, why is this painting so miraculous?
This is the thing in history that happens over and over again. If I see another fucking show about how the aliens built the pyramids,
Oh my God.
To the Virgen de Guadalupe, I swear to wishbone, I'm gonna fucking snap your neck. Guess what, Mimi? The Egyptians built the pyramids. Why? Because guess what? They knew math and they had slaves. So that's how they made the pyramids.
Exactly.
The aliens did not make the pyramids. Yeah. Africans made the pyramids.
Exactly.
And okay.
And the concept is not too crazy. It's the idea of a man-made mountain. And when you think about these spaces, for example, the pyramids of Teotihuacan, or like the concept of the water mountain is so important. So they're building water mountains because the idea is that the mountains have connection to the heavens, and then you get rain. And guess what happens when you get rain? You get food and you get life. It's a basic principle. It has nothing to do with con marcianos ni nada de eso way. But that's a way to diminish our society.
That's why when you talk about the Virgen de Guadalupe and that very specific painting, it's always like, it was a miracle. It just appeared. I'm like, no, this guy painted it. And he probably painted it after one of his family members. You know, it's like an actual person.
Right, it could be.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised. And it's part of like a long oppressive history. But the reality is that, and the church was afraid of this. Because once natives take control of the Catholic iconography, they did with it whatever the fuck they wanted. And the church didn't want that.
Precisely, but then they saw it as a tool to get more indigenous people in there.
Exactly, because she looks like you, she appears in your sacred side, she is exactly for you.
Isn't there like hundreds of Marias that have appeared? Because I know that when I went to Europe, I went with my Catholic aunt, and at first it was really annoying because any city or town that we went to, she wanted to get a rosario, a rosary from the church uh-huh. or from the different Marias. But then I got into it because I'm like, wait, how many different, they're like Pokemon. They're like, how many fucking, gotta catch them all. Gotta get all the Marias.
There is a Pokemon for, that it was passed by the Pope. You can actually catch saints.
Yeah, it's called Pokemon Go to Church.
I forgot the name of it, but it's you go on the streets and you're catching saints.
Oh my God. It's an actual thing. I hope somebody gets hit by a car doing
that. I downloaded it, but they wanted all my information. I'm like, no. So I did.
Yeah, be careful.
Yeah.
Like Mark Zuckerberg, they'll get you.
I mean,
so I want to get into, thank you for all that history. That was fascinating. I want to get into,
I'm not done, bitch.
But I know you're not, but we got to wrap this up soon. So I want to fast forward a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of using the Virgen de Guadalupe now is almost seen as, as radical. I've been to so many shows about Chicanx people, Latinx people, and they're using this. I always get a chuckle out of it because
she's one of the symbols.
She's one of the symbols of Latinidad, of Chicanidad, of Chicanismo. I don't know how to say
Chicanismo.
It. Chicanismo. And so it's like they're reappropriating the image and using it as a symbol for them. But the only reason that exists is a tool of colonization. It's a tool of white supremacy that they're using, that they're protecting. Like they get so angry if anybody disrespects that symbol. But I'm like, yo, you know how many indigenous people died because of this symbol?
Aided by this symbol, yes.
Aided by this symbol. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know how many people's lives were ruined by this? You know what I mean?
And to me, it's like a conflict.
Yeah.
Because, for example, when I moved to Chicago, that was the first thing I noticed.
Yeah.
Virgen de Guadalupe, and I'm just like, wow, like, you're so far. And it means something for me, even though I know the whole oppressive history, to be in a place that it's filled with murals of the Virgen de Guadalupe. I'm not going to lie. It's comforting because I know my people are there, because I know I can feel at home. I cannot feel threatened by those communities. So I understand it as a symbol of Latinidad and Chicanidad and Mexicanidad. So, but at the same time, I feel like instead of just co-opting the symbols out of nowhere because it's trendy, let's learn the history of it. And in fact, the whole history of Juan Diego wasn't part of the narrative. So the image was pushed in the 1500s. It wasn't until the middle of the 1600s that, in order to avoid people knowing that the image was made by an indigenous artist, they started to push the story of Juan Diego. So Juan Diego doesn't necessarily appear in the first writings. It's not till like the 1640s, 1650s.
Wait. Mm-hmm. So this is a made-up story?
I mean, this is a whole made-up story, but the part of Juan Diego, the big part that Juan Diego plays, because Juan Diego is the indigenous intermediary between the Europeans and the image of the Virgen de Guadalupe, that was downplayed. But instead of saying this was painted by Marcos Zipac or Marcos de Aquino, now they're pushing for the whole image of Juan Diego. So Juan Diego didn't even appear on image of the Virgen de Guadalupe till like the late 1600s. Because of that, because they're trying to hide this whole thing up.
Rewriting history.
Exactly. And you see Juan Diego with a lot of flowers. Why? Because the flowers are like the oils, are like the pigments that supposedly God used to paint the image of the Virgen de Guadalupe. And there's always a relationship between indios, the connection with the land, and flowers. So now you have this whole thing where you dejas a los indios en su place because they're from the land, because they're using flowers, and then you show that the ultimate indio, and I'm using this word because that's how they use it, that's the one that it appeared to. So now you're going to celebrate Juan Diego. But prior to that, Juan Diego wasn't even part of the equation.
Damn, it's man taking credit crazy. For all the work.
And that's another thing, I know you have some names of artists, but the spectrum of what means to be feminine in Mexico, it's always always using two colonial figures. O eres la Virgen de Guadalupe, o eres la puta La Malinche.
Ooh.
Yeah, La Malinche.
Who is La Malinche?
La Malinche was used by Cortés as an interpreter. And supposedly, according to the legend, which is bullshit, she had the first son. She had the first son of Cortés, Martín Cortés. So that's considered the first mestizo. So she's considered a traitor. But her story is a lot more complicated and more sophisticated than that. And we can get into that. We should interview Victoria from the Denver Art Museum. She's putting together a whole exhibition on La Malinche. But anyway, so either you're the traitor puta Malinche or you're la Virgen perfect Santa de Guadalupe.
Oh, yeah.
And it's always like that. So the image of both La Malinche and La Virgen de Guadalupe, today it's being used by feminists to make commentaries about being a woman in Latin America.
Damn.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Man, so if this is made up, then that means the Bible could also be made up?
¿Qué?
No! My world is crumbling! Yeah, I mean, it's very strong imagery, and I like what you said about it, like artists knowing the strength of this. And one of the people, one of the artists I want to mention really quick is this piece that you know about too, that was shown in Santa Fe back in like 99, I believe.
Yeah, late 90s, yeah.
Called Our Lady by, I think, Alma Lopez. Mm-hmm. And she, it was like almost, it was a self-portrait.
Yes.
But it was her as the Virgen de, a photograph of her as the Virgen de Guadalupe in a bikini. In a,
yes.
And people got pissed.
She got death threats.
Wow.
She got death threats because of, because it was seen as blasphemous. And even though she's using her symbol, because it's a symbol of Latinidad.
Yeah.
Reversing the idea of the virginity and goodness of the Virgen de Guadalupe and making it this whole cool thing. Pero like, those two things happened to her. Her career exploded. She became this badass Chicana artist, but also like she was afraid for her life.
Damn.
It's crazy. And this all happened in Santa Fe.
Yeah. And I mean, you see artists using it all over the place, and you also see it, you know, I read somewhere that the I mean, number one image reproduced in Mexico in print or in on tchotchkes, on calendars, on whatever, is the Virgen de Guadalupe. Second is
Last Supper.
Frida Kahlo.
Ay, Dios.
Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, Frida Kahlo. So it's like Frida Kahlo and La Virgen de Guadalupe, I feel like are our two moms basically.
And they're both interesting. That's so interesting because they're false representations of indigeneity.
Both of them are.
Both of them are.
Yeah.
Boom! Beesh! Wow.
Oh my Anything God. Else about La Virgen de Guadalupe's history that you want to point out?
Yes. So one last thing happens in the 18th century. There's a famous Mexican Creole artist. And when I say Creole, they're born in New Spain. They're born in Mexico, but Spanish background. But they're proud of anything that it's Mexican. A Creole artist, his name was Miguel Cabrera, which is probably one of the most important, if not the most important artist of the colonial period in the Americas. He was commissioned by the Viceroyalty and said, okay, let's put this whole thing to an end. You need to investigate the image of the Virgen de Guadalupe. So he wrote a book. It's called Maravilla Americana, or American Wonder. And the whole book, chapter by chapter, he analyzes the canvas. He analyzes the durability of the actual canvas. He analyzes supposedly the absence of priming in the painting, et cetera, et cetera. And that commission allow for artists not to be seen as craftsmen anymore, but actually painters, actually artists. So the status of the artist in Mexico goes to the roof because now they're analyzing the products of God. Because again, the painting was not made by Marcos Ipac. The painting was made
by God.
By God. So now humans, artists with capital A, are analyzing this image. So throughout history, you have that it's about oppression, it's about conquest, it's about the status of the artist, and finally it's about independence from the Spanish. So, and I have the actual quote here, it's a small quote about from David Craven, rest in peace, one of my advisors. He said, "This image has been used alternatively and sometimes simultaneously as a symbol of liberation as well as one of accommodation and control," end of quote. So that gives you all of, again, and we can spend another 2-3 hours just talking about this image because it's layered with so much history. Damn. We should do the same thing with the concha.
The bread?
Because it's one of the, I feel like when I see the image of the Virgen de Guadalupe, I think of conchas. Because we co-opt that. I mean, we make it ours. And we don't even think about it. We don't even think about the weight that the iconography that these things represent, even the innocent concha, could actually be very damaging to our people, you know?
I know.
Yeah.
Diabetes. Oh, yes. Man. Okay. Well, it's time to take a break, and then we'll be back.
Brack
again. We'll be back with some recommendations. Que llueva, que llueva, la Virgen de la Cueva. You know, you know what I like to do when it's raining outside?
Let me guess.
Go to my favorite restaurant, Lindo Michoacán. Because, girl, you got to have their caldos, have your siete mares, or my favorite, of course, just the fideo. When it's cold outside, when it's raining, and I want a nice nostalgic hug, that's where I go.
It's so good.
The original Lindo Michoacan on East Desert Inn.
And as part of Partners of Latinos Who Launch, guess what, Mimi?
What?
You can go to the restaurant, sit down, talk to the meseros and meseras and said, I listen to Latinos Who Launch, and what do they get?
25% off. That's right. Latinos Who Launch listeners get 25% off. And if the waiter doesn't believe you, he's probably new and needs to get fired. So say, no, I got to get my LWL discount.
Right.
Oh my gosh. I just went there recently, got myself a big old tortuga. That's what they call their tortas there because they're so big. It's too big.
A beast.
Again, Lindo Michoacan on East Desert Inn. Save water.
Drink margaritas.
Lindo Michoacan. And we're back.
Get behind.
Time for recommendations. Do you have any recommendations, Babalito?
I have two recommendations.
Dale.
So the first one is speaking about feminism and speaking about all these ideas about Latin American movements of feminism.
Yes.
There is a new band slash singer. The project is called La Bamba. And La Bamba just came out with a single, and the single is called Mujeres. Dude, she combines, this is from as a project from Mexico, she combines all kinds of different rhythms, and it's just uplifting. There's an article in NPR that talks about it and talks about how this is almost like an anthem for womanhood in Mexico. It's all kinds of different, I don't even know how to explain it because it's its own genre. Again, the single Mujeres just came out in October 26th, and hopefully by the time this episode airs, there's going to be a whole entire album. But for now, go and download Y La Bamba, and the single is called Mujeres. I'm not going to tell you anything. I'm not going to spoil it. Listen to it, and you're going to thank me.
Okay.
The second one is going to be the book. Again, I just want to mention it one more time. This is a definitive encyclopedia, almost. It's like this thick book. Beautiful images. It traces the history of the Virgen de Guadalupe from its beginnings in Europe, through its medieval iconography, through its meaning in Nahuatl, through its importance for artists in the 18th century and independence. It's by Jeanette Favre Peterson, badass scholar of colonial art. The name of the book is Visualizing Guadalupe from Black Madonna to Queen of the Americas. So if you want to learn more about this image, all you need is this book and you're set. And it will be a great Christmas present. So,
hey, wow.
Jeanette, if you get more sales, I need royalties.
Okay, good.
What about you?
Well, speaking of La Virgen de Guadalupe, I want to talk about one of my idols, Valentina.
Valentina.
I know that we've been critical of Valentina in the past, and I am still critical of Valentina because that's how we roll here on Latinos Who Lunch. I thought it was interesting how, you know, on RuPaul's Drag Race, the reason why I thought about her is because they made fun of her for worshiping La Virgen de Guadalupe. She actually calls
true.
La Virgen de Guadalupe her drag mother, which is true. Like, that's she. I mean, damn, can you imagine her look as Virgen de Guadalupe?
She's
that would be sickening. Okay. Oh, my. Okay, I also have a question because the Virgen de Guadalupe is green. Like the not her skin, but her manto.
It's supposed to be blue.
But it's like in the painting, it's like an emerald green.
That's a good question. I don't know if
But then you see it blue in some representations too.
That's the original iconography. It's always in blue. I don't know. I mean, I don't know much about this specific, but this color, bluish greenish, is very important for Mesoamerica.
So maybe it was a little bluer when it was
like
first painted, and now
Mesoamericans use jade, for example. They didn't even have a name for the color green. It was like in reference to the stone.
Okay.
So it could be part of that. It could be faded by the book, and I'm sure they tell you more about it over there. I don't remember.
Okay. Hashtag Google it, locas.
Yes.
Okay, I was talking about the representation of the Virgen de Guadalupe and how they framed her as being a crazy person on RuPaul's Drag Race. I thought that was that was fucked up. So I was like on Valentina's side because I couldn't believe that they were like playing like mariachi music and like cuckoo.
Era la cucaracha.
Yeah. Oh, something stupid like that. Oh my God. They can stop. Anyway, she wasn't portrayed in the best light in the show. She was almost cast as the villain on the show, right? Mm-hmm. I've been saying this from jump is like, for example, the reason why like Fifi O'Hara has such a hard time and is such a hateful bitch is because she hasn't fully, like, she hasn't accepted her role on RuPaul's Drag Race as the villain. That's how she's edited. Lean into it, girl. Yeah. Like, look at...
And there will be plenty of gays who will be so into
look
that.
At Bianca Del Rio's problematic, not funny person, not funny personality. Look at Alaska, like, she, Queen of the Snakes. She, like, took it on full on. Right. And we know it's funny. Like, it's not true. Like, we know it's all about...
And we know them for that.
How the show is framed and how it's edited. You know what I mean? But Valentina has realized this, right? And so... On her Meet the Queens, you got a taste of it. I didn't like on Meet the Queens that she says she represents all of Latin America. Like, I represent Venezuela and Mexico. And I'm like, no, you don't, bitch. You just represent yourself.
Yeah.
But to my recommendation, because I'm rambling now, she was on Katya and Craig's podcast, Whimsically Volatile, it's called.
Uh-huh.
And she did like an hour and a half interview that made me fall in love with Valentina all over again. So
damn.
I know you haven't heard it. Go listen to it.
I will.
And she says a couple things that are kind of like, wow, wow, whatever. But you got to remember, she's young.
I was going to say she's a kid. Yeah.
She's young and she's learning. And she's leaning into this villain character and she's really investigating her identity through her drag. And it's really cool.
That's beautiful. That's
it's cool to see her evolve.
Yeah.
And to joke, because I think she kind of, I mean, especially because she was a new queen, she kind of took herself seriously.
Right.
Too seriously. And that's always dangerous as a drag queen.
I'm down.
So Whimsically Volatile with Valentina. Listen to it. I'm excited for All Stars. I think it airs in a couple days.
I need to believe again. I don't know why. Like, I'm not excited this season at all. So,
you know why?
I'm going to watch, but I don't know. Like, Like, I love RuPaul for bringing drag queens into normalcy, into the foreground. But sometimes I wondered, like, some danger and some political statement has been stripped out of that because of RuPaul. So I want to believe. So I'm not going to throw
because
shade.
Because it's men defining what femininity is.
Exactly.
That's what's fucked up about it.
Caca.
Uh-huh. And you need to go take a caca. So I'm excited for it. You know why? It's because there's been this year, because this year started with All Stars 3. We had season 10.
And now
it's
going to
end.
Star.
So it's like three seasons in one.
That's a lot.
That's too much. It's
too
oversaturation.
Much.
They're doing a Christmas special right now.
There's cartoons. There's drag queen cartoons on Netflix.
Like, yeah, but that's like...
But that's what I'm saying.
That's actually a good recommendation too.
Do you
know it's originally...
It's Brazilian.
It's Brazilian. Yes. And then it's dubbed in English. So it's actually a Brazilian cartoon. It's fucking cool.
I haven't seen it.
It's good. It, yeah. I mean... I don't really fuck with cartoons like that. So I watched one episode and it was not bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
That's it. This has been an awesome episode. I'm so happy.
Yeah. Great idea, Babalito.
Yes.
And as always, you could visit us at latinoswholunch.com. You can send us an email, asklwlpod@gmail.com. And if you have some time, you can donate to us. Go to the donate button on our website. We got PayPal, Venmo, Cash App at Latinos Who Lunch. If you can't do that, at the very least, leave us a review. 5 stars.
5 stars solamente, cabrones.
Because the more reviews we have,
the more visible we are. And visibility leads to representation, and representation matters.
Today's episode was produced by Justin Favela and Emmanuel Ortega. Music by the band Brownout. I'm Fabi Fab.
Yo sono Babelito.
Bye.
Ciao, ciao, ciao.